Welcome to The Fighting Priests, a podcast exploring orthodoxy and jiu-jitsu. Two paths, one struggle. Father Ted Perestivopoulos and Father Thomas Sandberg are two orthodox Christian priests who also happen to be practitioners of jiu-jitsu. Together, they explore how these two unique worlds intersect and what it means for our spirituality. Here's Father Ted and Father Thomas. Welcome, everybody, back to The Fighting Priest. My name is Father Ted Perestivopoulos, and I'm here as always, well, not as always, but most of the time, with my co-host, Father Thomas Sandberg, up in Calgary. Father, how's it going, man?
It's going good. Yourself?
I'm okay. I'm good. You know, I was complaining that it got suddenly cold here, because we were lucky because it was fairly warm in November for Toronto, at least, because usually we get snow early, and we got some snow and now it melted, but it's hovering around the zero, the freezing mark. You got a blizzard like 2 weeks earlier. How's it going there?
The Chinook came in this week, so now it's warming up.
Uh-huh. You want to explain to our listeners in America what a Chinook is?
Chinook is when the warm air from the west side of the Rockies comes over to the east side of the Rockies and drops the temperature.
Okay.
So it goes from really cold to all of a sudden you can be outside in just a sweater pretty fast. Yeah, it's pretty weird coming from Manitoba where it's just cold the whole time.
Just prairies.
Yeah, so winter you get like these weird breaks where it's very warm all of a sudden.
Nice.
So, yeah.
So you get sick now or what? Like, because it's cold, hot, cold, hot, cold?
Trying to stay healthy.
Yeah. I got sick last week. I got sick a week and a half ago, actually. And it was not fun. And it was like, and my chanter decided to go visit his son. So my chanter, George, his son is an abbot at Holy Archangels in Texas, in Kendalia, Texas, at the monastery there. And so he went to visit him. He hadn't seen him since, like, he hasn't been down there for like 3 years because of COVID and stuff. And of course he leaves and I don't have a backup chanter. So here's me, like, with no voice, trying to chant funerals by myself and doing both parts, which is hilarious. It's kind of like doing a puppet show. Yeah, it was pretty horrible, but we got through it. So voice is almost 100%, but I didn't stop training like a good person that I am and going to the dojo and spreading it to everybody. But it wasn't that bad. But and I had a competition this past weekend here in Toronto, which didn't go as planned. I lost. I got the default bronze. When there's just enough of you in the bracket that you still get a medal for participating. And so that happened on the weekend, but I wasn't feeling 100%. So yeah, so that was it. But did you do any interesting BJJ stuff for the last couple of weeks?
Just been training. That's all. Just normal training.
Normal. Just not too exciting. Yeah. Great.
Just train. It's always difficult on Saturdays because, like, I train for 2 hours for sparring, right? And then I got to make it back to the church for Vespers. And it's like people call you on the way in between. And it's like, okay, like, I'm trying to quickly shower, rehydrate so I can get to the church. So,
are you teaching any classes right now? Like, as far as the jiu-jitsu?
No.
Oh, they don't have you? Like, jump in ever, like, guest white belt, you know? I mean, black belt, sorry, white belt.
Nope.
No.
I'm a student.
Look at you trying to be all humble. All right, well, okay. Well, that's enough catching up for us. We have a very interesting guest today. I'm excited because I've been talking with her for a while on the gram. And her name is Caroline Xavier. And she lives near outside of Nashville, Tennessee. And she is, according to her own message that she sent me, a super white belt. I don't know if that means like she's really, really a white belt or if she's an exceptional white belt.
Really good at
being white. She can just explain it to us. So she's been training for a bit. So she's new to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. She is a stand-up comic, which I love because I love comedy. And also she is an Orthodox catechumen, which is really cool. So we've never had an Orthodox catechumen. We've had Orthodox converts before, who have already become Orthodox, but she's kind of like new into the jiu-jitsu world, relatively new. And she's also new to this crazy thing that we call Orthodoxy. And we're here to kind of listen to her and her story. And I'm really, really excited to have her. So Caroline, welcome to the podcast.
Hi. I listen to you guys a lot, and it's so funny because I got to see your like warm up in real time, and you always do the same thing. It's like in Tennessee, it's never we're never like, hey, how are you dealing with the weather out there? And you guys always greet each other like you surviving, you making it happen.
Yeah, well, it's Canada, right?
It's, I want to start using that word, just like totally misplaced though. What's it called? A Chinook?
Chinook, yeah.
A Chinook. I think down here that's a salmon.
Well, you know, it's a quick warm breeze, right? So maybe like you see a friend you haven't seen in a long time. Oh my God, you just came in my life like a Chinook. Something like that. I don't know. Something stupid like that. I don't know.
You just came into my life like a Chinook.
That's horrible. Yeah. If you can work that.
Work the Chinook life?
If you can work the Chinook into your next stand-up, I will laugh.
I'm out here Chinooking? Yeah. Oh my gosh. I don't know. I'm going to sneak it in and then I'm going to send you the audio.
Please. Please.
Yeah.
So Caroline, tell us a little bit about yourself. Like, you know, a little bit about your background. Like just...
Life?
Yeah, life. Who are you?
Super white belt is like super white belt. Like I was so dedicated to jiu-jitsu before the pandemic, and I would have never thought that I would still be a white belt. But then the pandemic happened and it was real easy to stop getting beat up on a regular basis, like mm-hmm. super easy, and get, you know, fat. It wasn't hard at all. But super white belt is, I actually hadn't trained in a couple years. And then when I found my white belt on Instagram, and then they sent me to you guys, your podcast motivated me to go back to the gym. So I signed up and went back to the gym specifically because of your podcast.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And then I was rolling and we were doing takedowns, and then I wrecked my back and missed 2 weeks of work. So thanks for that. I appreciate the jiu-jitsu vacation.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah,
so it's fun.
My white belt. So you discovered my white belt first?
Yeah.
Great.
And then are you secretly the my white belt guy? I've never listened to the podcast, but I always thought that that was your alter ego.
What?
Yeah.
No, we had Jim Trick on the podcast a few episodes ago, the guy.
Oh, I didn't hear that episode. I always thought, I was like, do you know the Instagram stalking? I was like, okay, my white belt sends me to the fighting priest. So I bet this is Father Ted's alter ego.
I'm gonna send this to Jim. So
I'm gonna listen to this podcast and it's gonna be like you at the Channer stand. It's just gonna be you doing both parts.
Yeah. No, Jim Trick is a purple belt, just out of Boston. And he used to be like 450 pounds or whatever, like ginormous. And then like jiu-jitsu changed his life. And now he's like plickety plick, thin guy, motivational speaker, jiu-jitsu man, who's been doing jiu-jitsu for about 4.5 years. And he started this My White Belt podcast to kind of encourage people to like change their lives. And it's really great. So, and he used to be like a Protestant pastor.
Oh, whoa. Yeah. Okay, I'll definitely have to listen to that episode. So, I've been listening from the first down.
Oh, of ours? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
So I just haven't gotten that far. I just saw that you had sent me the one about your, when you went to Worlds.
Oh, yeah.
And you had mentioned like, you know, choking out the Lutheran.
Yeah. not the way we would put it, but sure.
Yeah. Well, it was just what we wish Orthodoxy would have done during the Reformation. No, she didn't. No. Yeah, I did.
Oh. Let's edit that. Well, no, we won't.
We'll edit that out. No, it's funny too, because it's just so funny because you're like just two men of God, just like rolling around, killing each other.
Yeah, sometimes. Well, you know. Yeah. It's you can do it on the mats what you wish you could do to Prisher. I'm just joking.
I won't make any reformation jokes. That's like, I think that is a problem. That is a real, I was just joking, but that is a real problem with catechumens. I will say that. They watch 2J Dyer pod episodes on YouTube and they get fired up and aggressive.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is true.
Yeah. Yeah. Father Thomas has seen all his videos.
Yeah, Dyer is good. You just have to, he's more educated than a lot of his audience, so they don't know fully everything he's talking about, I would say.
He is interesting. I think that you could take out like the word aggression and just put in apologetics, and it's like he is the super aggressive apologetics guy. He goes to a church down here all the time. He's at St. Peter's in Lebanon often in Tennessee with Peter Hears.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we know him too.
Yeah. Yeah. My favorite YouTube wormhole Orthodox guy is actually, I'm going to butcher his name, but I think it's Father Barnabas Powell.
Oh yeah, he's great.
He's good.
Yeah.
I know him personally.
Oh, you do? He cracks me up.
So he's on Ancient Faith Radio, right? Do you know what that is?
I know what Ancient Faith Radio is, but the only thing I've ever listened to was a podcast about fasting that you sent me.
Oh yeah. Okay. So Ancient Faith has been around for a while now, and it's the biggest Orthodox podcasting conglomerate, I guess you could say, company in the world. And they do really good work. They also do publishing, things like that. So they're huge. And Father Barnabas has been on there for a while. Like, I think he's done multiple shows and podcasts. And I know him because I was on Ancient Faith Radio for like a decade. So I had a podcast for sermons on there called iSermon. And then I had Father TED Talks, which was a ripoff of the TED Talks, you know, just with the FR in front of it.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, I didn't get sued yet, so that's okay.
Winning.
Because I stole the logo like exactly as it is. I put an FR in front of it. So that's like my little trademark.
You should edit that part out for the lawyers, for sure.
No. No one's listening. It's okay. We're safe. So I know Father Barnabas from like Ancient Faith, conferences and things like that. He's a very nice man and he's very talented.
Yeah. There's nothing better than an Orthodox priest with a Southern draw. It cracks me up. It never gets old.
It's true.
I love it. People will ask me, like, I can't explain Orthodoxy to anyone because what am I going to tell them? Like, I don't know anything. And so I'll just send them his Boot Camp 101. And it's really great. Yeah.
Right. So you are outside of Tennessee. Are you from there originally?
Oh, no, definitely not. No, definitely not. I was born and raised in Los Angeles. Like not Los Angeles proper, but like Los Angeles County. And then the last like 5 years before the plague, I lived in Sacramento.
Okay.
And then the plague brought me here to Tennessee.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. As it does, because I could go into a grocery shop here during the plague, and in California, not so much. Well, really it was, if I'm honest, it was Joe Rogan. All roads lead to Joe Rogan. He had some doctor on in the beginning of the plague that totally freaked me out. And then they locked down Sacramento. So I was like, oh, I need to be on a farm. And so that's what I did. I came to the South. Yeah. Nice. I just grabbed my kid and went to the South. Yeah. It's been great. I like it here. People are nice. They actually like care how you're doing, which is weird.
Mm-hmm. And you have a kid too, you said?
Oh yeah, I have a 13-year-old kid. Wow. He's nice. Yeah. He's a good guy. He does Like the first 3 years, shaky. Everything after that, solid kid. Nice. He is also a catechumen and does jujitsu.
There you go. Yeah. The ranks are swelling.
Yeah. He's great. Before I was in the South, though, I was raised an atheist.
Mm-hmm.
So I had never even I never Jesus nothing until I came to the Lord's country down here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay. Well, actually, you know what? Might as well. I was going to get into that later, but I wanted to ask you also, like, you know, from the secular side, before we get into the religious stuff, the heavy stuff, right? You are a comedian.
Yeah. Well, working on it.
How did you get into that? Like, because that's always like, people usually have really interesting, fascinating stories about getting into comedy, because like nobody does it. So.
Yeah. All roads lead to Joe Rogan. that's what happened. I was married for 12 years and I was a super overweight, miserable housewife that just hated my life. I was in an unhappy marriage and I was just miserable. I started listening to Joe Rogan. I had kept hearing about this guy. This was probably like, I don't know, 5 years ago or something. And it was like, finally there was people that had my kind of personality and I wasn't being put down for it, if that makes sense. Like every time I went out with like, you know, these suburban moms, I was always like a black sheep. Like whatever I said was inappropriate or it wasn't funny or, and then I got this little escape for a couple hours a day while my kid was at school. And then started eating a keto diet, of course, as you do when you listen to Joe. Then started doing jujitsu, of course, mm-hmm. as you do when you listen to Joe. And then accidentally did an open mic. It wasn't even purposeful. It was some soccer moms. My son had gone to this private school for dyslexic kids. And there was like some soccer moms that had invited us out and said, oh, we want to do this crazy thing and go sign up for an open mic. And I didn't realize at the time they were setting me up to do it, which was really just kind of ridiculous. And so I get there after jujitsu, I'm all sweaty and gross and I barely made it on time. I sign up and then none of them had signed up at all. They just completely set me up. And then there was like a legit comic that was at this open mic and then I had to follow her, which was horrifying, in this little blacktop comedy, this little teeny tiny place outside of Sacramento. And when I got off the stage, there was a guy there named Al Schumann, who now runs Verbal Insults at the Comedy Store. And he said, was that really your first time? I said, yes. He said, keep coming back. So then I would go every Wednesday, and then every Wednesday became two times a week, and then three times a week, and then four times a week. And then eventually I started getting on shows and, yeah. And then I started doing it close to full time for no money. Like it wasn't like I was living the dream. It was like I was living out my dream, but starving. And then COVID happened. And so every show that I was a part of got canceled. And it was like the greatest gift ever, because the person I was then wasn't somebody that was on a very good path to long-term longevity or like a good life.
So then how did you discover Orthodox Christianity?
Orthodoxy. Okay. So the plague happens, right? And during the plague, I met this guy and God knows, God knows my weaknesses for sure. He knows that like, I love carbohydrates and guys. So dudes and donuts is what I always say is the 12-step program I need. And so I finally, this guy hits me up on TikTok, and my old TikTok account had like not a great following, but like a decent following or whatever. And I had done this joke about how hard it must be for serial killers during COVID, like to get a girl in your trunk from 6 feet away, like just the difficulty. And whatever, it was a dumb joke. And then he saw it and he messaged me and he said, I think you're the funniest thing on the internet. Don't stop doing what you're doing. And then I was like a semi-attractive trucker. I'm sold. And then this idiot goes and meets some trucker off the internet. Like
serial killer?
That loved my serial killer joke? Are you kidding me right now? Do I have a brain? No, I don't. He had a beard and a ponytail, which I was meant to be with an Orthodox man. That's what that means. I was already for it. But like, he treated me so nice. And I'd never been treated that nice before. Like, he was kind and like he opened my door and he actually cared about what I was saying. And I was like, what is this? This is weird. And then I found out he was raised in a Baptist home and he was a Christian. And his dad said that we weren't equally yoked. And I'm like super competitive. So I went down to Barnes and Noble and got a Bible. And I was like, oh, I'm going to disprove everything that this family holds dear. Yeah. And then I'm gonna out-yoke him. Yeah. Watch out, bro. Yeah, exactly. And then I started reading this crazy thing called the Bible. And then every answer for every problem I'd ever had was just within Proverbs alone. Like, it, I was like, how? And then the thing that blew my mind the most was being so, I worshiped at the altar of comedy, like, because I found my self-worth in it. I thought I was pretty good at it. People would give me affirmations that even though I was just like featuring, and I got a lot of opportunities that I didn't deserve way early on. I thought like, oh, it's because of me. Like, I'm this person. And there, once it was gone, I realized I was putting like all of my identity in comedy. And then when COVID took it away, I always thought I would fail because of my own inadequacy, but never like the world would fail me at that opportunity. And so I open up the Bible and there's like in Proverbs, it says, even in laughter, the heart may ache. And I was like, how did these old guys know that? Like, what is going on here? And then I kept reading it and started reading it every night. I'd never really been into a church before. The relationship with the handsome Baptist trucker didn't work out. Can you believe it? Yeah, it wasn't a TikTok love story like I was hoping for. Then I walk into a non-denominational church because I started watching this local church online. And I don't know how deep you want to go into this. I was super, go down the rabbit hole. Okay, yeah. Here we go. I was super, I feel like I'm talking too much too. I'm like, oh, no. They're interviewing you, so it's okay if you talk. But I'm like, shouldn't we be talking about you guys too? Great. Okay. No pressure.
Continue.
This is story.
So you walked into a non-denominational church.
I walked into a non-denominational church and you know, that modern worship music, if you have a smidge of narcissism and brokenness, it's like they wrote this song for me. It was, yeah. So yeah, exactly. I just felt like I was finding these little like nudges from God everywhere, and I was so depressed and like just so broken from trauma from my past. And this is where it goes real dark. I was intentionally contemplating suicide at this point. And I had basically just had one of those come to Jesus moments where I was like crying in the bathtub, just like a movie. No bottle of wine though, because I don't drink. I would entertain suicide, but not a glass of wine. Keto. Oh, you know my hurt. It's a problem. You know what? That's a real problem though. Yeah.
Yeah, I loved it.
They need a 12-step program for sugar alcohols. That's what they need a 12-step program for. Okay, so I'm in the bathtub and I'm just like, you know, basically crying out, like, if you're real, please reveal yourself to me. And at that time, I was still treating the Bible like it was a magic eight ball, like I could just shake it and open it and Jesus would talk to me. And there was a passage in there in Proverbs that I'm going to butcher memorizing or saying it off the rip, but it's like, basically all who fail to find me harm themselves and all who don't seek me love death, something around there. And, I was like, oh, all who fail to find me harm themselves, when I'm literally contemplating, like, let's check out of here. And then from then on, I was just completely sold out for God and what led me to orthodoxy. This is such a long, you know, Christ journeys are never just a one sentence story. So I was started going to this non-denominational church and I was like, oh, this is what I've been missing my whole life. And then every time I wanted to learn more about Christ, I was always met with an answer that was either you should pray about it or are you plugged in? And I plugged myself in as deep as I could to the non-denominational world, but like showing up at a small groups to read a book by Timothy Keller didn't really lead me any deeper down understanding scripture. And so as I was, you know, I would talk to women in small groups, which granted a lot of these women are my closest friends now that I met at my first small groups, but it was like, I had been quote unquote saved for 2 months and I was out yoking them. Like I didn't read scripture more and looked into it more. And I was like, how have you been a Christian your whole life? And just reading these, like I said, like these Timothy Keller or Charles Spurgeon, like type books, I'm not learning anything about biblical history, biblical. And so anyways, I decided, this sounds so crazy, I decided I wasn't going to learn enough about God in this non-denominational church that I applied to and got accepted and went for about 8 months to a seminary school.
Wow.
Because I was like, oh, well, if they're not going to teach me, then I'll just have to get a doctorate in theology. Because I guess that's the only way you can learn, because I'm not learning at church, which sounds terrible because I was learning great things for life, like great things to apply to my life. I was building a community, stability. Again, a lot of those ladies are my closest friends. But it was like whenever I said, would ask like these deep questions that I didn't understand, even as simplistic as why did Christ have to die on the cross? It was like the answer I was met with was so shallow. Like there was no real depth. Like I was like, it has to be deeper and bigger than that. So again, God knows my heart and he sent me an Orthodox man. First, he sent me a Baptist man to get me in the door. Then he sent me an Orthodox man. And I go out on a date with this guy. And we closed a coffee shop down. We showed up there when they opened. We talked for theology for 8 hours. And I, of course, was like, what do you mean you don't sit? Like, I was so fired up. And then he said this sentence to me that I was like, but the Spirit is leading me into ministry, because there was a whole bunch of people telling me, oh, you're meant to be a youth pastor. And the first person that told me you're meant to be a youth pastor, I said, but I've read Timothy and I don't think that's true because I'm a woman. And their response was, as a leader in a church, his response was, well, we don't really adhere to Timothy anymore because Mary is the one that was outside of the tomb. And so Mary was the first person to proclaim the gospel, which is why females should be proclaiming the gospel and teaching from a stage. But that sentence, am I going too far? I'm rambling, aren't I?
No, it's great. Keep going.
Okay. The reason that didn't sit right with me was because I felt like if women were teaching from a stage or leading a church or leading a whole congregation, that it would trickle down to destroying the roles in the home life. Mm-hmm. And as a single mom, for me, it was like, oh, well, I know what it's like to, like, I am the original gender fluidity. I'm like a dad and then I'm like a mom. And it's really, it's not, I hate to say that it's not right. And I can feel it because I'm living it. And mm-hmm. So if you're going to a church and the representation is that the female is leading the congregation to Christ, it, for me, it kind of threw off everything that I had been reading in scripture.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was kind of like number one. And then, but I had been told by so many people, again, the lack of humility that I had during this time in a non-denominational church is another big reason I was led to Orthodoxy. But this guy's, you know, talking to me, and I had had negative vibes of Catholicism because my dad was born and raised Irish Catholic, and that's why he raised me an atheist. He says he's a recovering Catholic. rough for him. He had some really angry nuns apparently at school that just kind of turned his whole family off from. I hear that a lot though. Anyways, so this guy is telling me all of these things, and there was a couple things he said to me that I couldn't dispute. One, I was angry that they had to stand the whole time. And I was like, well, if Jesus was in front of me, would I be sitting? Was kind of like my first thought. Like, would I be sitting in a big comfy chair with like coffee? And then the second big one was the idea of true, like, I'm going to butcher these words, but like true sanctification, like the idea that we could be transfigured through Christ and actually, what do you call it? Like theosis?
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to lie. I got dipped hard in that non-denominational water, and I still came up the same person. And there was, I would say, like, what do you mean you have to be a catechumen? And there was no real formal education. There was nothing. It was just, is Jesus Christ your Lord and Savior? Get the bucket and dunk her. Like, it was so just quick. And then I remember sitting in small groups and saying, like, well, how do you pray? Like, how do you pray? How do I talk to God? I was born and raised an atheist. I don't know how to do any of these things. How do you pray before a meal? How do you read scripture properly? Like, there was no real education. It was just like a hangout, kind of. Mm-hmm. A super important part of my journey, but still it was lacking something. And then he said, if your journey through Christ is supposed to be that way, then why did the disciples walk with Christ for 3 years in the desert? And he was like, I think that we should all walk with Christ in the desert before we can get the Holy Spirit on the day of Pentecost. And I was like, oh, duh. Like, be educated before you're just dunked into, because I was dunked. And then I thought, like, in my head, I was like, I'm going to be a new creation in Christ. I'm going to come up and I'm going to be 120 pounds. Like, I thought, like, this whole, like, this, this miraculous thing would happen. And I was like, well, why do I still have all the same temptation and all of the same sin in my life that I had before I was put under the water? And then there was no education on how to avert yourself from temptation or how to say no to. It was kind of like, I don't know how you guys feel about this guy, but that, I think his name's Frankie Schaefer.
Yeah, Frank Schaefer.
That book, Dance Alone in the Dark, or Dancing Alone.
Dancing Alone.
Yeah. He said, I got it right now in the cabinet. He said, I'll take two.
Right there.
Yeah, right up there. I got it right up there. But something that just struck me with that book specifically was he would say, people would say, go home and pray about it. And it would be me. He said it would be me crying in my pillow at night, praying about it, but with no real education or understanding about what I was crying or praying about. And I think I would stand in the room if Jesus was there. So I felt like for the first time I was confronted with the idea of I should be worshiping and praising God. I shouldn't be showing up at a church to see what I can get out of it and what God should be worshiping and praising about me. Mm-hmm. And then also my favorite people get mad when I say this, so I hope it doesn't offend either of you, but for me, a lot of the times it's really hard to be like, oh, I'm going to be Christ-like. Like, it seems like so far removed for me to be as sinful as I am now to Christ. So I would find a lot of comfort in the stories of the apostles. And then because I had to, in a lot of places, go and Google what happened to the apostles after the book of Acts, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of like, well, these are the people that I hope that this isn't like blasphemous, but these are the people I really identify with, because they're not God or the children of God or the Son of God. They're more like me on a journey with God.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I started learning about the saints and like their journey, it was like, oh, well, of course I can completely identify with, like, you know, especially like my go-to is St. Helen, those single moms. We got to stay together. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love her so much. She's my favorite. Her, and then also like St. Moses the Black, and there's just like a whole bunch of people where their story, I was like, oh, I can completely, this is so applicable to my life. Like, this is the Jocko Willinks and the David Goggins of the faith. Like, I'm so motivated and intrigued by their stories. And what drives me crazy is if I talk to friends and I say the S word, saint, they get like, what are you talking about right now? But meanwhile, they love to tell me about what Stephen Furtick said, or Charles Spurgeon, or C.S. Lewis, or all of these people that they've sanctified in their head as their word on the interpretation of God is like infallible. That was a lot. Anyways, the dude, he did jujitsu and he was also Orthodox, and our relationship we weren't really compatible, but he did lead me to an Orthodox church from that 8-hour coffee and completely changed everything. Like, when I walked into the Orthodox church, I was like, oh, this is it. 100%. Really? Yeah.
What was it? What was about it that made it? Like, what was the impression, or the first impression? What was about it, that first impression that made you think this is it? Was it a feeling, or was it something you saw? Was it something you like?
I finally found people worshiping Christ with the reverence that he deserved.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't, this is overused, but it wasn't a motivational speech. It's like,
sure,
because I had gone from one non-denominational church to another one, and the other one I picked because he read line by line out of the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And right around the time I left to convert, he was reading, I believe it's 2 Peter. And he read the line that I'm just paraphrasing, so forgive me, but how the Bible can, like, scripture's not up for interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
He read that on a stage and then just winged it and interpreted what that meant. And then it was like, well, I had a decent following on TikTok preaching my interpretations of the Bible when I had only known Jesus for 5 minutes. And people were like, yeah, you should be a preacher and or a minister or a youth pastor. And on what authority, though, was yes. Something I always had an issue with. And then when I started diving into Orthodoxy and they started talking about like apostolic succession, that made so much more sense. And to like trace the lineage back to the apostles, it was so comforting and freeing. And even though I thought I was going to be like a youth pastor or thought that that was God's plan for me, I had to walk away from the seminary school that I was in and kind of reevaluate a lot of my life. And it's still like super painful at sometimes. I mean, I was just texting you the other day about my first real prolonged fasting,
mm-hmm.
but it's like, every time I have a question about something Orthodox, the answer on the other side, the answer always makes me closer to Christ and a better person. It always bears good fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I dislike the fasting because I want to be in ketosis and get jacked, it's like, well, do you want to be in ketosis and get jacked because that's healthy, or because you're completely vain and want to look good naked? Like, be honest, right? And it's like, well, obviously it's the latter. So why don't you just trust in God that he would trust in people to make a plan for us that would make us not gluttonous and live a healthy life, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just, you mentioned arrogance, and like, not just you, but like, just generally speaking, this irreverence that we have for history. It's like, it's been working for a better part of 2000 years, but I know better now, right? It's like, because there were such, you know, dumb yokels living in the, you know, agrarian lifestyle of the Byzantine Empire that they didn't know science. They didn't know this. Like, they didn't know everything we know, but they knew enough and they knew what was really important. And and actually one thing that struck me kind of just going back is that you mentioned like, yeah, go become a youth pastor right away. You've been Christian for like 3 seconds and like go teach. You know, there's a book in the Orthodox Church. You might've heard of it. It's called The Rudder, right? The Rudder is the compilation, like a rudder, like a ship, right? You know, and it's the compilation of all the canons of the church, right? So all the different ecumenical councils and local councils and basically all the decrees and rules. I hate to use the word rules, but that's what a canon is, right? It's a rule by which we live, of all the different councils and you know, wisdom of the church over the centuries. And there is a canon that says that, you know, neophytes, so newly baptized Christians, are not allowed to enter ministry for at least 3 years. Right. So in their wisdom, they knew, right? It's like, and you mentioned that your friend who kind of brought you into Orthodoxy, this idea of, you know, the apostles followed Christ around for 3 years. And this is where the canon kind of bases it on the scripture, right? So it's like saying, well, yeah, you can be baptized, but you still, and you could have been a catechumen before for like years. Cause like in the ancient times, it was anywhere from 1 to 3 years, right, to be a catechumen before you got baptized. But then they're saying, the canon is saying, well, you need another minimum 3 years. And that's not even a long time. To kind of get comfortable in your so-called Orthodox skin before you can even contemplate taking up a leadership position within the church. And that's wise, because it's just kind of like, you know, you're so fresh, like it takes so long. And even 3 years, I think, is not a lot, like to kind of, you know, immerse oneself in this 2000-year-old multifaceted tradition, right, that exists. So it's what you realized on your own, kind of like through your own experience and your own kind of like, you know, what you were kind of going through this process is something that's been codified in the canon law for like centuries, right? So there you go. So you give us a little bit of how you came to Orthodoxy and kind of the things that pulled you there. BJJ, you mentioned your friend kind of, your Orthodox friend who introduced you to it, he also did jiu-jitsu. Is that how you got introduced into jiu-jitsu?
Oh no. When I was early on listening to Joe Rogan, I started jiu-jitsu in 2019 in Roseville, California. And I went to two gyms. The gym that I would really call my home gym was Cassio Warnick's gym. And, I started in 2019 as a fat, miserable housewife, and I lost 100 pounds in 8 months doing keto and jujitsu. And I think my favorite thing about jujitsu was I was so uncomfortable, and I'm such an anxious person, and I'm actually really shy, surprisingly, by nature. And it put me in a really uncomfortable situation. And I also realized if you can get through, because I would be so scared to go to the gym to like walk on a treadmill because I don't want anyone to look at me. And then when you're like, you know, a woman that's been married for 12 years and like my first time doing jiu-jitsu, there was this older man named Guillermo. And Guillermo was like a 5'7", pretty fit, but a little bit of a beer belly guy. He was the blue belt, but he sweated like he was trying to baptize me. Like it was so, and I had only ever been like that close with my husband. I was married for like 12 years. And so to be in like someone's guard, like, oh my gosh, who are you? Strange man. Are we married now? What does this even mean? Like, I laugh when I get nervous at the worst times. Like if someone's dying, I'm in hysterics. It's very uncomfortable. So I couldn't stop laughing because I was so anxious, and then Guillermo's like in my guard and he's like on top of me and he's like sweaty and I can't stop laughing. And then this like tablespoon size bead of sweat dumps off his nose and falls into my mouth hole. Yeah.
Yummy.
And so I was like, once I got through that, I could really do anything. It felt like, and then, yeah, I, jiu-jitsu was interesting. I didn't really like that, politics is the wrong word. I didn't like the personal, maybe semantics. I don't know what would be the right word of that gym. So that's why I moved to Cassio Warnick's gym. And that place was great. And because Cassio Warnick is so well known, like my whole jiu-jitsu experience changed because there was like more black belts than white belts. So you walk in and there's like 8-10 black belts and they put black belts with white belts. It was like, I just learned so much so fast and they were so patient and so kind. And I was doing it about 7 days a week for quite some time. And I always wanted to compete. And I went to watch a competition one time and I saw this guy's arm get snapped in half. And then I thought, that's probably not for me.
Okay. So now that you're, now you're a catechumen, what would you say are some of the parallels or contradictions between being a comic and being Orthodox?
So hard. It's so tough. I struggled with this for so long, just being a Christian and going back to comedy, being a Christian and doing clean comedy. And even being a Christian, like dirty comedy. Okay. So step one for me was like, okay, you get rid of cuss words. Okay. Well, I've got a lot of that out of my regular life, but I'm not perfect at it. That's for sure. And then next is like, okay, well, you don't talk about anything particularly inappropriate. Well, why? Because you don't want people to think that about you, or because you don't want people to think that while they're sitting there, because you don't want to be a stumbling block for anyone. And then the next kind of thing that I wrestled with was, well, I also don't want to just put down, if I'm supposed to like love my neighbor or not have any issues with a brother to come to the altar of Christ, then I shouldn't really be making fun of other children of Christ, like being cruel to whatever. And then the third step is, okay, well, what does that leave? That leaves self-deprecating humor, where I just make fun of myself and tell stories about myself. But then it's like, if I go on stage and I say like, I'm stupid or I'm crazy, then there's a room of 10 people or 200 people that are repeating that back in their mind. And it's like being professed out to the enemy that I'm stupid and crazy. And I'm like, am I making like hidden covenants with the enemy, or like opening up the opportunity for evil to walk into my life because I'm on a stage professing all of these things about myself that a lot of the times are just completely made up and not true. And then the hugest hurdle out of all of it was, well, how do you step on a stage doing comedy and not be prideful and stay humble and glorify God with your words? So where I'm still struggling is, I can't just go to a monastery because I have a 13-year-old kid. So how do you live an Orthodox life where you feel like you have this gift from God to talk to people and make them laugh and both glorify him and not be proud and stay humble in that space? And when I talked to my spiritual father about it, his kind of thoughts were, well, clearly you have like a personality that is meant for something like this, but you just have to make sure that comedy fits into orthodoxy and orthodoxy doesn't fit into comedy. Like everything in your comic life has to be around the liturgical calendar and also staying within the bounds of orthodoxy and continuing to grow in your, like, I have lack of a better term, salvation or relationship with Christ. And so I've only been back now in comedy for a few months, and it's been really difficult writing stuff that's completely clean, and that I like, I do a lot of, you know, Southern Christian jokes, and I, the other day I wrote a joke and I had to change one of the words because I just felt this super gross feeling inside myself, like, oh, I'm not supposed to say that. The joke was really, it's really dumb. It's like, I'm talking to this Southern woman and she introduces me to her son. And she's like, this is my son, Phil. Phil is the biblical name, named after Phil Robertson of the Duck Dynasty, which is dumb.
Yeah, that's funny though.
But I had like the idea of like him, Phil being a biblical name and then it being the guy from the Duck Dynasty. I was like, this is really funny. But what I had to change was it before that, the first iteration that I wrote down was, this is Phil is a biblical name. He's named after Saint Phil Robertson. And I was like, well, putting Saint in front of Phil Robinson, like that's not really glorifying or doing justice to the actual Saint Phils that are out there in the world.
If I may say, the version without the saint is actually funnier.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Not because I'm a priest. Not because I'm a priest. Because if it was funny with the saint, I'd tell you, even if it was blasphemous. But but I mean, like, it works better. You know this. Like, the simpler the joke, the better, right? Like, the less details you have to put in, right, for the punchline. So it's like, it worked better. The saint seemed out of place to add that extra little detail.
To it. Yeah. Yeah.
It didn't, yeah. You didn't need to do it. Yeah.
It's just it's been really difficult. What are your, from a priest standpoint, where do you guys think that, like, obviously you listen to Joe Rogan a lot, and I especially adore Two Bears, One Cave with Tom Segura and Bert Kreischer. But, like, where do you guys fall in with, you're bringing all of these things of the world into your life for entertainment, but we are also learning a lot. Like, I've learned a lot through podcasts over the years about myself and mental health and all sorts of things. So it's like, where do you think comedy fits into orthodoxy? And do you think, as a lay person, that an Orthodox person can be on the righteous path to salvation and have comedy as a career?
Father, I don't know, your thoughts first. I have some thoughts, but.
The second part of the question, yes. And then the first part, I think especially now, comedy is the way the society is going. I think comedy is necessary because most comedy is really, it's like social commentary about the spirit of the age, essentially. Right. And some of it, like, even like in my church here on the weekend, we just had, how do you say his last name, Fontaine? Angelo.
Sarukas.
Yeah. When Angelo, how do you say it? Sarukas?
Sarukas. Yeah. He's a comedian.
He's a Greek Orthodox comedian, right? He lives in LA and we had him here for a comedy night on Saturday. He had a clean act. Maybe he said, well, pretty clean.
He does right? both. He does both. Yeah.
So, but I think it's, I don't know how to phrase it. I just think it's necessary, to talk about certain things in certain ways, because sometimes even if you do it in a certain way that might seem more, not as clean, it's necessary. Those type of things grab people's attention and they make you think about things as they truly are, instead of trying to talk about something in a clean way that might not necessarily be the most clean topic to begin with.
I agree 100%. I know Angelo very well. We're friends. So Angelo's originally from Canada. He, I don't know if you've ever heard of him, Caroline, but he's good friends with Russell Peters, which I'm sure you know who he is. Russell, right? So, and he's open for him a lot. And so Angelo's from Montreal originally. He lived in Toronto for some years. And he can do a more edgy, you know, I guess you could say secular show, but then he can also do a very clean show. And he's very respectful, especially when he does shows for churches and things like that. Now, okay, one can judge or argue whether he should even be making a distinction as a person, right, as an Orthodox Christian, right? But what I like about Angelo Tarukas and other comedians like Jim Gaffigan, for example, right, who's extremely popular, who's clean, right? And also the jokes that he makes are rarely ever inappropriate in any way, right? He talks about what he knows. He talks about family, talks about raising children. He talks about, and he's hilarious. And I can't remember the last joke that I heard. Like, for example, Jim Gaffigan said that would not be appropriate even for my children to listen to, right? And he's a headliner. He's like just one of the most popular comics in the world, right? So, of course it's popular. Of course it's possible. And I think, you know, it depends on what your values are. And the skill is there. If you have the skill to do it, what you speak about, of course, what you choose to speak about is key. But the skill of using comedy to speak truth in the world, which is, I think, what comedians mostly do, I don't think that skill is different from comedian to comedian. It's just the content that they choose, right? So I think it's definitely possible, and you can be very successful at it. But going to what Father Thomas's point was, that sometimes even the edginess of it or pushing the boundaries, even as an Orthodox Christian and as an Orthodox priest, I would agree with Father Thomas that sometimes you need to push the envelope for the sake of, not for the sake of yourself, but this, for the sake of getting certain messages across. And I will use an example from the greatest preacher in the church, which is St. John Chrysostom, right? Because St. John Chrysostom lived 1,700 years ago. Father Thomas will know this quote because I've read it to him many times and I love it. And it's shocking. But St. John Chrysostom is a monastic, right? He lived 1,700 years ago. He wrote the liturgy that we use today, right? But most people, you know, he was prolific. So we have a lot of his writings, right? We have a lot of his sermons. People don't realize that we idolize him today. We say, oh, he was the greatest preacher. And, oh, you know, he was so amazing. But like in his life, people hated him. Like Christians didn't like him because his sermons were like 2 hours long. And he'd be like griping about like how decadent people were and how they were such horrible Christians. And the church oftentimes was empty because people didn't want to go hear him. And he got exiled 3 times in his life because he would make fun of the emperor and the empress because they were decadent and things like that. So he would say things in the church that if we heard today on a stand-up, you know, like would be like, oh, that's not very Orthodox. I'm going to read you a little quote just so you understand. Okay.
I'm ready.
The stuff that this man, who we consider to be the greatest preacher who wrote our liturgy, like words he would use. Now, this is an English translation, of course, but it's accurate. And it says, so this is a homily on 1 Corinthians. And he says, I read this like every week just because it makes me laugh. He says in the church now, right? Hagia Sophia in Constantinople, right? He says, great is the tumult, great is the confusion here in the church. Our assemblies differ in nothing from a tavern. So loud is the laughter, so great the disturbance. Just as in the baths, in the markets, with everyone shouting and causing an uproar. The church is not a barbershop, a perfumer's, nor any other shop in the forum. In church, we behave more impudently than dogs and pay as much respect to God as to a whore. The church is not a place of conversation, but of teaching. But now it is no different from the forum, nor probably even from the stage, from the way that the women who assemble here adorn themselves more wantonly than the unchaste ones there. Hence, we see that many profligates are enticed here by them. And if anyone is trying or intending to corrupt a woman, I suppose no place seems better than the church. So, that's, you know, intense. Yeah, it's intense, right? And it's like, and he's using like bad words, you know?
Yeah. He dropped the whore word.
He said the word, right? Yeah. It's like, you know, and he's talking about people like enticing women inside the church. And like things like, if I read that sermon right now in my church on a Sunday, there'd be letters to the bishop.
Yeah.
How dare he call us, you know, women or men, you know, men enticing women, women dressing like prostitutes. Like, what are you saying, Father? That's not nice. You can't say that. Right. So that, you know, what do we priests do every Sunday? We're doing a type of stand-up.
Yeah.
Right. It's not comedy. Sometimes there's comedy, but you know, depending on the priest, but you're standing up in front of a bunch of people and you're trying to convey the message, right? Not a message, but the message. And you're trying to do it in a way that is effective. And you're trying to do it in a way that will reach your audience. And you're trying to do it in a humble way, but at the same time playing to your strengths, which God has given you. So how do you find that balance between your arrogance and your ego? Like, oh yeah, this is amazing. I did so well today. People really love the sermon. right? You know, good. I want people to tell me a good sermon, Father. Well, do you really?
You know? Do you ever have those kind of thoughts? Are you ever like, oh, I killed the censor today? You see me shake them?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you have those thoughts though, right? And those are bad thoughts. It's like, that's why I have my wife sitting in the crowd, because, you know, it's usually like the litmus test is the days I think I did a great sermon, she'll tell me it sucked. And then the days that I think my sermon sucked, she tells me it was the best. And she's usually right. You know, because, and God usually shows us that's usually the case, right? Because you don't know sometimes where the Spirit is leading you, and it's not about what you think. I crushed it. Yeah. You know, like, well, sometimes, you know, that comes across the wrong way, right? Like, you know, you don't want to be too arrogant. So to your point or to your question, like, can you do it and still be humble? Yeah. Like, you have a gift that it would be a sin not to cultivate that gift, right? Right. Like, you have talents, right? You have to multiply your talents, but you got to do it in a way that acknowledges that they didn't come from you. Right. So it's hard.
Yeah. Now, whenever I have those thoughts, like, oh, I killed it or whatever, I just go straight to like the Jesus prayer seems to be like,
yeah,
a good one. Just like, I think it's not so much the thought coming in, but like the, if you're going to sit and meditate on it. Like, and if you're going to believe it and hold it in like it's real truth, instead of just like, oh no, I don't accept that.
Mm-hmm.
Get out of here. But it's hard for me. It's not so much the standing on the stage. I actually hate that part and it makes me want to throw up because I have such bad anxiety, but it's the, I get so excited about the puzzle piece. Like you have this idea of a premise and you think it's kind of funny. And then working it into a joke, and then also having to do it clean makes it so much harder. And like figuring out that balance, it's been really interesting, but I get super excited about the puzzling together, but it's like, I got a long way to go. I mean, I had to completely restart in a brand new area, and like, it's interesting. It's good. It's humbling.
Mm-hmm. Well, one final question. Okay.
Okay. All right.
I promise.
Do you accept Jesus as your Lord and Savior?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So yeah. So the final one is the predictable one, which is what our podcast is all about. And we tend to ask most of our guests this, but not always. So do you see, you've heard the podcast before, for you personally, do you see any kind of like significant parallels between your Orthodox kind of journey so far and your jiu-jitsu journey, like the two worlds, like do they overlap in any way? Do you see things that are you know, common elements? And if so, like maybe give us one that you find really important, or like two things, maybe something that they complement each other in some way. And if not, that's okay as well. No.
Yeah, because even as a white belt in both Orthodoxy and jiu-jitsu, it's like every time you learn a new move in jiu-jitsu, it opens up 10 new movements mm-hmm. in your mind. And in the depths of jiu-jitsu, I feel like it's never ending. Like you could train 20 hours every day for the rest of your life and you would never know everything there is to know in jiu-jitsu. It's unending. And I feel like Orthodoxy is the same way. I heard somebody say one time, and it might've been somebody quoting a saint, but they said Orthodoxy can be as shallow as a puddle or deep as the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's the same for jiu-jitsu. Like you can be that person that stays a white belt forever because you don't want to move to the next thing because it's difficult, but through, for again, lack of a better term, discipline and obedience in both jiu-jitsu and Orthodoxy, it changes the way you view the world in both humility and patience with other people.
Mm-hmm.
It's there's something so special about the both of them and how they really go together. And also what's funny to me is like, if you find a Protestant jujitsu goer, not all of them, so I'm not putting a blanket statement on them, but it seems like they only have time for church on Sundays, but they have time to train 5 days a week. And my favorite thing with Orthodoxy is it's one of those things where you have to train multiple days a week. And it's like, if you truly love the feeling of being in church, I adore it because it has like, you even have the opportunity in Orthodoxy for like open mats. Like you can just show up. And it's like, it's so big. And like the idea, I feel like, I don't know if this sounds too hippy dippy, but not the Protestant view on the word grace, but the Orthodox view on the word grace. I feel that in that flow state of jujitsu, like where you're struggling, but you're using your mind, and you're struggling and you're using your mind. And Orthodoxy for me is all five senses, and so is jujitsu. So there's so much overlap.
Yeah, let's not forget that taste.
Yeah. No, there really is. I mean, how many times have you like had your face on the mat and you're like, bleh. Yeah, it's, and the, I mean, I'm not going to lie, the smell of the incense is way better than the smell of jujitsu. Yeah, for sure. But I think Orthodoxy is practical and meaningful. So like, maybe if you could just start sensing the mats before.
Well, that's what you get when you roll with a priest, right? Because
yeah. Literally, you guys smell like frankincense all the time.
It's true. My friend says, like, your ghee smells weird. I'm like,
it smells like the Lord, buddy.
Yeah, it was at church. Sorry, dude.
Breathe it in. You'll get a blessing.
That's funny.
Yeah. That's crazy. So, do you guys have a favorite comic?
Oh. I already mentioned that I like Jim Gaffigan a lot just because he's clean and because I identify with like his family jokes. Cause I have like, he has five kids. Okay. And I have three, but I identify with like his struggle. I just think it's really admirable that he can build such a big career and such a massive following on completely clean comedy, which is very rare to see.
At least 90% of his act is him talking about food for 20 years.
Yeah, amazing. He's
still going.
The McDonald's joke is never ending.
Yeah, 100%.
I guess I'd have to go, I'm being honest, currently my favorite comic is Ryan Long
from Toronto. I've never heard of him.
Yeah, he is definitely not clean. He is ultra relevant for the society we are currently living in.
Yeah, well, I feel like you guys up in Canada, you have it a little bit tougher than we do down here right now. But we're definitely
he immigrated to the States, and he adds that to some of his jokes. He's a Canadian immigrant, white immigrant.
Yeah, he didn't want to go to jail for his jokes, so he was like, "I'm gonna go to the U.S. I might get slapped by Will Smith, but that's fine."
I'm a Chappelle fan. I don't agree with a lot of the things he says, but he is a master of his craft, right?
It's hard not to laugh at.
Yeah. Well, it's the nuance of his storytelling, right? And it's the way he sets up his jokes and how like the points that he makes. And I don't even think people appreciate how profound a lot of his jokes are. They just think, oh, he's just making, but like, he's actually saying things that are very, very important. And his social commentary is extremely important. I don't care about his personal beliefs. I don't care about his personal politics. I think that a lot of times he'll say things because they need to be said, right? And he's just thought provoking. So yes, of course he's super popular. I just think I think a lot of people find him popular for the wrong reasons. I don't know personally, but
yeah, he's so thought provoking. He makes you double take a lot of what you just read and thought nothing of, and then you think about it through his view and you're like, oh my gosh, I would have never even dreamt of that. Like that never even crossed my mind. And most of the time his view is right to what's right for society.
Correct. Yeah. And it's moral. So a lot of stuff is immoral, of course, like from an Orthodox point of view, right? But a lot of things that he says, and he'll go out on the limb and he'll say them. And It's like, I'm like, I can't believe you just said that. Like, but it's like,
but a lot of the times it's based off of equality and kindness, even though it's not necessarily orthodox. It's definitely usually from a place of kindness.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And logic and just common sense, right? So I really like him as well. You know, but yeah, there's lots. I don't know. We can't say them all. So
there's so many good ones, right?
On that note.
On that super high orthodox note.
We're going to wrap it up. But it's been awesome talking to you, Caroline. And really, really enjoy the conversation. Yeah, we hope to have you on again, because this was a really easy and wonderful conversation. And
baptized, come back.
Yeah, yeah. We'll do a post-baptismal episode. So when you're enlightened and everything makes sense, you'll be able to share your real knowledge with us.
When I have the Holy Spirit and I just I wake up as like Saint Sophia or whatever.
And of course, I'll be in touch so we can start our podcast, Dudes and Donuts.
It's a new problem.
That'd be a creepy podcast for a comic and an Orthodox priest. Dudes and Donuts.
Preacher and a pastry chef. Yeah.
Yeah. That's good too. Yeah. See, it never ends. But until we see you again, I wish you best of luck on your journey. God bless you. And we'll be following you, and we'll stay in touch either way.
Yeah. I'm so excited. Thank you so much for everything. You guys are the best.
Thanks for being here.
You have been listening to The Fighting Priests. Feel free to download us on Spotify, Apple iTunes, or anywhere else you get your content. Check us out on Instagram at The Fighting Priests. And if you have any questions, feel free to email us at thefightingpriests@gmail.com. Till next time, keep training the body and the soul.